For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, and with a reminder that you should subscribe to it and our social media channels if you don't already, as you should also donate to help support our work if you don't already. And then with a salve to viewers in Italy, who have made it number 25 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction. Yes, I know, ciao now means hello as well as goodbye, but salve looks like Latin, and we could use a little more tradition these days. As we could also use a little more good sense, including about Arctic ice, which we actually do have a little bit more of. There was quite the kerfuffle at the start of 2024 when we commented, courtesy of Tony Heller, that Arctic sea ice on January 9th, 2024 had hit its highest level on that specific date in 20 years, and we suggested that it was rebounding. And amid all the angry shouting, some people did attempt to object rationally that one walrus does not make a winter, and that what mattered was long-term trends. Though they also pointed out, arguably contradictorily, that Arctic ice had bottomed out absolutely in the modern satellite era on September 17, 2012, at a mere 3.387 million square kilometers. We replied that it was strange that it had done so over a decade ago if the ice was melting relentlessly as the Arctic warmed faster than whatever. But we also said we'd keep an eye on it. And we have, and it has fluctuated since. But we decided to go and have another look to commemorate that record low, and it turns out that in this year, 2025, the figure for September 17th was 4.686 million square kilometers, nearly 40% more than in 2012. It's also well above 2023, and yes, 2024, marginally below 2022, 21, 18, and 17, and well above 2016, 19, and especially 2020. Perhaps Potholer54 would like to make another video claiming that we can't read charts, or that rebound doesn't mean what the dictionary says it means. We also insist that if you look back a century or more, there's nothing odd about that trough in 2012. And even 120 years is not really the long term geologically. But it sure beats 46 years, especially if you also ignore the last 13. And speaking of long term trends and data, the cool kids, or at this point the hot kids, are all independently stampeding to attribution science, a form of hocus pocus that bypasses evidence to get the verdict in question quickly. For instance, quote, recent Canadian heat waves made much more likely by human-caused climate change, end quote, from Environment and Climate Change Canada. Oh, really? It chirps, quote, Canadian climate scientists recently analyzed 10 of the hottest heat waves that impacted the country in July and August of 2025 using the Rapid Extreme Weather Event Attribution System. Human influence on the climate made the following heat waves at least 2 to 10 times more likely to occur, end quote. Which should already have you rending your lab coat. Because if it's at least, then the upper limit is more than 10. Otherwise, what they meant was at most. And also, when the variation is that wide, you're entitled to suspect that you're getting noise, not signal. Also, when they say more likely, you might well wonder, more likely than what? Alas, the answer is, quote, the system uses climate models to compare today's climate to a pre-industrial one, end quote, not data. As for a pre-industrial, which one? The Cretaceous? The Oligocene? Heck no. They're comparing it to the inside of a computer guessing about, quote, the climate of the 1800s, before the Industrial Revolution, end quote, that started in the late 1700s. And it gets worse. Their first such heat wave was, quote, Alberta, August 25 to August 31, peak daily high temperature during the heat wave 28.8 degrees Celsius, degrees above normal daily high temperature 9.3 degrees Celsius, end quote. Okay, we'll bite. If this thing was 2 to 10 times as likely, and there was one in 2025, then presumably there had to be one every 2 years in the 1800s, or every 10 years, depending where we are in the range. Was there? Egad! You have no idea whatsoever? Not how many peaked at 28.8 degrees Celsius, or how many were 9.3 degrees Celsius above whatever normal day highly temperature you've concocted in places for which we have no readings back then? No idea of that one either? No. None. No data. Just a computer simulation that spews gall. This week's newsletter also featured an obsession watch because of a Scientific American email, Could AI Kill Off Humans?, in which a senior scientist at RAND, quote, and his colleagues focused on three existential threats, pandemics, climate change, and nuclear war, end quote. Plus a Euronews Green email, quote, Dogs, Cats, and Hedgehogs, How Pets and Animals Are Helping with Climate Communication, end quote. So, here's an imaginary hedgehog to teach your kids about an imaginary crisis. And then the New York Times offered us, quote, Times readers' most pressing climate questions, end quote, which included such gems as, quote, What are the implications of a renewable energy world dominated by China, which seems to be very likely at the moment, end quote. So, never mind that silly old science. But here's something awkward. The Manhattan Contrarian notes, with art illustrating the problem, that the climate cult in his home state has become obsessed with climate resiliency and spent $300 million fixing Wagner Park, which had originally opened in 1996 as part of the Battery Park City development, and was, quote, previously just a pleasant waterfront lawn of about 3.5 acres, end quote. But, in a panic, they raised it 10 feet and turned the accessible green space into a series of forbidding white terrace walls. Plus, if the seas really did rise massively, which, of course, they show no signs of doing there or anywhere, then the rest of Manhattan would be flooded, leaving this park a desolate island. So it's expensive, ugly, and pointless. Not a good look. Meanwhile, from the Canada Pivots But Doesn't file, the National Post's Tristan Hopper takes a look at, quote, all the times the Liberals said they would build an oil pipeline, end quote, and then didn't. And it's quite a list. And there's also this Euronews.green news item, loosely speaking, headline, quote, In Portugal's marine forests, scientists discover kelp is a powerful carbon store, end quote. Which you might briefly think was a rare good news story on climate from an alarmist outlet. But no, because, quote, Scientists warn that climate change is threatening the seaweed's ability to store carbon and support biodiversity, end quote. So, it's not a good news story in either sense. Leaving aside the usual objection that climate change is not a causal force, but a statistical description of changes in long-term weather patterns, it assumes that in nature, if conditions improve for an organism, it dies. In this case, more CO2, which kelp stores because it's plant food, will kill off kelp. Right. And heaven help cows if there's a lot of grass. And if journalists are learning such things in school, heaven help anybody who sends their kids to a public education system instead of doing it themselves. In the newsletter, we also dissect a Canary Media email that says, quote, electricity prices are rising all over the country, end quote, before claiming that, quote, in California, lawmakers just took a big step toward curbing them, end quote. Apparently the plan here is the same old, make utilities charge less and pay more and hope they don't go broke. But there is something original and encouraging here, in that the story admits that energy prices are high and rising, and that, at least to some extent, implicitly, climate zealotry is to blame. So we're also encouraged when we read from Heatmap Daily, quote, the clean energy transition's dirty underbelly, end quote, which is all the mining used to get the minerals for this clean energy. And who knows? Maybe stories of this sort will start a trend of debating reasonably, admitting contrary evidence, and, what the heck, attacking adversaries' arguments, not their characters. Nor not, because one of the favorite alarmist gotchas after the extinction of polar bears, disappearance of Arctic ice, and death of coral reefs is the supposed irrefutable increase in the frequency and ferocity of hurricanes, which, alas, is a no-show. As Matthew Wilecki wrote, quote, I've been monitoring the Colorado State University, CSU, real-time hurricane dashboard for weeks now. Scroll down to the storm-by-storm table and the accumulated cyclone energy, ACE, plot. They tell a story that's far from the supercharged nightmare we've been sold, end quote. Indeed, what they actually show is few storms with limited energy. And yet, he says, quote, the media machine churns out alarmist headlines while never mentioning the hurricane drought, end quote. And worse, we say, when they do mention it, they insist that it's not proof of a hurricane drought, which is getting rather silly. In July, an alert reader or viewer emailed us a Tallahassee Democrat story headlined, quote, Enjoy quietest start to hurricane season since 2009, but back half could be brutal, end quote. Yes, and monkeys could fly out of my armpit. But we're not reporting it until we see some evidence. Despite which, Scientific American thundered confidently in June about, quote, why this hurricane season has experts on edge. Predictions for an above-average number of storms, communities that are still recovering, and cuts to the National Weather Service have meteorologists and other experts worried about this hurricane season, end quote. But then this month, the publication finally grudgingly emailed that, quote, hurricane activity in the Atlantic Basin is historically at its peak on today's date, but not this year. Here is why, end quote. And we thought, no, let us guess. It's because climate change is intensifying hurricanes, so it's just a blip. Yep. Quote, so far the season's effects have been mild, and although September 10th has historically marked the peak of Atlantic hurricane activity, the basin has gone nearly 2 weeks with nary a tropical storm in sight, and none expected during the coming week either. Still, experts caution that the current lull in tropical activity doesn't mean that this year's threat of hurricanes is past, or that forecasters' predictions about this season were wrong, end quote. So, hurricanes not happening doesn't mean hurricanes aren't happening, and the fact that our predictions were wrong doesn't mean our predictions were wrong. Exactly the sort of story we were afraid we were going to encounter. And another thing, if you're a Canadian of a certain vintage, you remember the 1992 cod moratorium, in which a 500-year-old Newfoundland fishery was brought to a sudden halt as the fish population crashed and the government had to take drastic steps to prevent complete extinction of the species. Basically, a 2-year suspension that's still in effect. Of course, back in the 1990s, no one thought to blame climate change. Instead, they pointed to massive fishing fleets scouring the oceans for decades for everything that moved. But a group of climate scientists published a paper in 2003 based on, of course, climate models, not real-world data, warning that ocean warming would speed up the decline of North Sea cod, which were already almost all gone. Unfortunately for them, though maybe fortunately for the fish, the have-it-both-ways rule soon kicked into gear. 2 years later, a new paper in a different journal, also based on climate modeling, said, quote, individual growth rates for many of the cod stocks will increase, leading to an overall increase in the total production of Atlantic cod in the North Atlantic, end quote, which seems a good place for it. So, will climate change help or harm that cod population? Tell us which answer you prefer, and we'll find a model that gives it to you. Then in the newsletter, we came back to Matthew Willicke's update on the very quiet 2025 hurricane season, which was based on a website that we ourselves have recommended. That's the Colorado State University Real-Time Tropical Cyclone Tracker. And again, 2025 was forecast to be an above-average storm season. But look at this chart. This is the accumulated cyclone energy index, and it's at only half the level expected for a normal year at this point. And as we've said before, we'll say again, if this discrepancy had gone the other way, if ACE was above average, you'd have heard all about it by now under headlines shrieking, worse than we thought. Finally, from the co2science.org archive, last week we told you about weeping lovegrass that was brought from South Africa to North America as hardy ground cover. Well, maybe it's weeping for its cousin, Aragrostis racemosa thumb stend, which is also known as narrowheart lovegrass. It was left behind as a South African native grass, but while pining at home, it is enjoying the extra CO2. In 2001, 6 experiments showed that an additional 300 parts per million of CO2 boosted its growth an average of 11.7%. So, don't be narrow-minded concerning CO2. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I know Arctic ice when I see it.